If you have not read it, you probably have heard the story anyway. O. Henry wrote a short story called The Gift of the Magi. In the story, there's a young couple that's newly married. They're very poor. Della has beautiful long hair that Jim delighted in. Jim had a precious possession, a gold watch that he had been given from his father. The day before Christmas is there and they have no money. They can't buy anything for the other. And Della decides to sell her hair. And she did that and took the proceeds from it and bought a platinum fob for Jim's precious watch. A fob would be like a watch chain on a pocket watch. So Jim comes home Christmas Eve, and there he sees his wife with short hair. And a little shocked, he gives her his gift, a set of beautiful tortoiseshell combs for her long hair, which he had bought with money that he had received from selling his gold watch. A great story of sacrifice and giving what one holds dearest because of love for another. Unlike O. Henry's story, the next story that we have given to us by the Apostle John about Christ tells us a true story. A true story that demonstrates sacrificial giving, coming from a heart that's filled with love and thanksgiving. And all of this, the story that we just read and we'll look at now, is in the context of the approaching cross. John carefully tells us the Passover, which means the cross, is only 6 days away. After a few weeks in the country where Jesus has been with his disciples, a little town we talked about last week of Ephraim, Jesus returns to Jerusalem and its area just before Passover. And he stops in Bethany, and there he visits his friends. There's a little bit of a challenge regarding chronology, and I'm not going to get into that. The chronology in John and the chronology in Mark are slightly different. There's reasons for that. John is not concerned about chronology. He's concerned about the subject. And so he moves things around a little bit. That shouldn't bother us. But we are in the days just before Christ is crucified. John reminds us that this is a particular Bethany because there's more than one. This is the Bethany where Lazarus lived. You know Lazarus, who I just talked to you about, who died and was raised by Jesus Christ from the dead. And here, Lazarus lives. Chapter 12, beginning with verse 1, if you will, gives us a little bit of the rest of the story. You know, he was resurrected in chapter 11, and here's the ongoing story. And we get filled in a little bit. And it's because of Lazarus's resurrection that they have a dinner. John uses the word therefore to lead into verse 2. So there in Bethany, they have a supper, and the reason is Lazarus was raised from the dead by Jesus Christ. And so it is to honor Christ and also rejoice in Lazarus, who is now living and here with us. The word supper indicates an evening meal. It appears from Mark's gospel that the supper was in the home of Simon, who had been a leper that Jesus had healed. And here they meet and enjoy the fellowship and a meal. And guess who's serving? Martha. She's helping in the kitchen, even if it's not her own kitchen, apparently. It seems to be an area of service that Martha enjoyed. The preparation of a meal here for maybe 15 people, the disciples, plus Simon and Lazarus, and Christ himself. And Martha's exercising her gift with a quiet spirit. This time, though, she's not complaining. It's her gift to the Lord. And she serves quietly. Lazarus is there. And the men, we're told, are reclining together at the table. That was a Middle Eastern custom. John indicates that it's really an honor of Christ for raising Lazarus from the dead. And Lazarus is there, singled out as an important participant in the dinner. So the three siblings are all here. And now the sister of Lazarus and Martha enters the story. And Mary, too, serves. But she serves in quite a different, unique way. Verse 3. Mary took a pound of very costly oil of spikenard, anointed the feet of Jesus, and wiped his feet with her hair. The house was filled with the fragrance of the oil. Mary comes in as they are eating, and she comes to Jesus with what is called oil of spikenard. It was a pound, we're told. The Greek is litron, and it comes over into the Latin as a liter that we know of today. It was about 12 ounces. It was in the form of kind of a thick oil. Primarily, it was used as a perfume, also for burials. It was made from the stem of a plant that grew on the border of India and Tibet. And so it was brought over mountain passes from India by camel. And so, as you can imagine, back in those days, it was a very costly perfume. Mary takes this spicy oil and pours it out upon Christ. Now, from Mark's discussion of this, apparently she poured it on his head, shoulders, and robes, and then the emphasis of John is on his feet as well. And she kneels down, she lets her hair down, and wipes Christ's feet with her hair. Well, the result of this is the whole house, not just the room, the whole house is filled with the fragrant odor of this perfume. What a surprising gift this was for the Lord. It was an extravagant gift. Costly, costly perfume. In fact, shockingly costly. In verse 5, Judas estimates its worth at 300 denarii, a year's labor of a common laborer. Our sin nature is such that even when it comes to the Lord, we are often inclined to think, what is the minimum I can give. We don't think of how much can I give. Love is generous. Think of the widow that came into the temple, and Jesus is watching, and she put just a part of a penny into the offering. But Jesus said it was all she had. She gave everything out of love for the Lord. Well, Mary, filled with love and thankfulness to Christ for Lazarus' life, she gave extravagantly to the Lord. Her gift was also a gift of humility. And we see this in several ways in what happens. First, she kneels at Jesus' feet. Now, we've talked about this before, but Mary was often at the feet of Jesus. We see her before kneeling at the feet of Jesus or sitting at the feet of Jesus learning and listening to him teach. Here, Mary kneels at Jesus' feet doing what the lowest of servants would not do. And rather than a towel, she wipes Jesus' feet with her own hair. Mary is abandoning all propriety in what she's doing. It was a social taboo in that day for a woman to let her hair down in public. A servant would not even do that. It wasn't done by a modest woman. In fact, rabbinic literature has a story of a woman named Tamitha, a woman who had seven sons. And interestingly enough, all seven sons served as high priests. When Tamitha was asked how it was that she had such an honor, she replied that the rafters of my house never saw the hairs of my head. Now that's hard for us to imagine. But that was her idea of piety. And yet, out of love, out of thanks to Christ for Lazarus' life and much more, because she was a true disciple of Christ, Mary humbled herself, knelt at Jesus' feet, let her hair down in public, and wiped her master's feet. This gift of Mary was a gift that was without concern of what others thought. You know, we're often so conscious of others watching us in the things that we do in general and specifically in service to God. We kind of want to be noticed. We want people to see our gifts, see our service. We want to be noticed in our piety. But Mary seems unaware and unconcerned about all those that are watching and what they think. Her whole attention is on Christ. Harry Ironside was a pastor of Moody Church in Chicago for 14 years back in the 1930s. And he told of a successful business executive who wanted to become involved in Christian outreach and evangelism. And he helped to open a small mission work in the downtown area. And when his office was closed, particularly on Fridays, he would go down to the mission. And there he would take a bucket and water and a brush, and he would start cleaning the chairs and the floor. And no one in the company or in the mission even knew of what he was doing. No one even thought about who was doing the cleaning. One day, a couple of young men from his company happened to come by with some things, and saw him cleaning and they objected. You know, you shouldn't be doing this. This is beneath you. We'll scrub the floor. We'll find somebody else to scrub it. The elderly businessman responded, "No, let me do it. I want to do it for Jesus' sake." And he understood the joy to serve Jesus in any way that he could. Mary gave to the Lord without thought of praise, without thought of anything in return for it. Certainly not for selfish reasons or her own advantage. Her gift also was without concern about those watching, in that in full view of all the men around the table, she anoints Christ. And the overpowering fragrance of that spikenard goes through the entire house. And as a result, she becomes the center of attention and the center of controversy. While Mary's mind was centered on Christ, she gave expression to her devotion and served her Lord. Love like Mary's and devotion to Christ like Mary's will always stir up opposition. Mary's action was no exception. Darkness, as we saw last week, darkness does not like light. So verse 4, one of the disciples, Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, the one who would betray him, said, "Why was this fragrant oil not sold for 300 denarii and given to the poor?" What a contrast between Mary and Judas. Mary, filled with love and thankfulness, gives extravagantly to the Lord. Judas, filled with self-love, counsels stinginess. John tells us three things here about Judas. He was one of the disciples chosen by Christ himself to be one of the 12. He was surnamed Iscariot. Probably this means that he is Judas, a man of Kirioth. Kirioth was a town in Judah. And that would mean that Judas was the only one of the 12 who was not a Galilean. Judas, we're told, was also the one who is about to betray Christ. Well, the disciple of Christ, Judas, responds negatively to Mary's demonstration of love for Christ. And from Mark, we learn that the other disciples apparently joined in with him. They followed his lead, so to speak, saying, "Yeah, this really is a waste. It's extravagant. It's over the top. Why wasn't this sold and the money given to the poor?" The 300 denarii was probably a quick calculation on his part of what this amount of genuine spikenard would cost. But no one says, "Oh, no, it didn't cost that much." It wasn't scoffed at. So a laborer would get 1 denarii for a day's labor. So 300 denarii, if you subtract Sabbaths and feast days and so on, would be about a year's labor if you saved everything and spent nothing on yourself. No food, no housing, etc. So really, this would represent several years of savings for an ordinary man. Think of how much help that could be to the poor. And Mary just poured it out. What a waste. If it had been sold, think of all the good that have would have done for the poor. But John notes verse 6. Here's another little footnote telling us a little bit more about Judas. This he said, not that he cared for the poor, but because he was a thief. He had the money box, and he used to take what was put in it. Judas was not really concerned about the poor. He had other motives. John already has mentioned that Judas is the betrayer and would manifest the ultimate disloyalty to Christ. But now he tells us something else about Judas's character. He's a thief. The word thief here in the Greek is klepto. So in English, we have, for example, a kleptomaniac, someone that has an uncontrollable urge to steal. That's the word that describes Judas. But not only does Judas steal, he's also the treasurer of the disciples. He is the one that carries the money bag. He is the one that pays the bills. Apparently without not a lot of accountability. For John says he would help himself to what was in the bag and serve his own interests. We're starting to get a fuller picture of Judas, aren't we? Judas was not an innocent who was just used or manipulated by the Jews who hated Jesus. He was, in the words of Jesus, a devil. He was corrupt. He was unregenerate. A reminder to us again of the depravity of the heart of the unregenerate. Think about this. That mighty miracle of Christ, of raising Lazarus from the dead after 4 days in the tomb. Judas was there. Judas witnessed that great miracle. He probably helped participate in bringing it about, whether moving the stone or unwrapping Lazarus from the burial cloths. And yet his corrupt heart was not touched in the least by the demonstration of Jesus' divine power and omnipotence. Judas is typical of unbelievers. He was a taker. He was stingy. He was greedy. He was looking out for himself rather than Christ. Certainly not the 12. In Ephesians 4, actually we read it earlier, Paul says that Christians are to put away stealing. And instead, we are to work with our hands that we might be givers to those that are in need. Followers of Jesus Christ are not to be takers. We are to be givers. We are not to be stealing and grabbing for ourselves, but we are to be open-handed to others. Generous in our giving. Judas has no sympathy for what he sees as a waste of money. That could be going into his own pocket. And to Judas's greedy heart, it's eventually going to move him to even betray his Lord. Matthew's gospel indicates that it's right after this event that Judas goes out to the high priest and offers to deliver Christ into their hand. And they immediately on the spot count out to him 30 pieces of silver. Mary, out of love, out of thanksgiving, gave extravagantly to Christ. Perfume worth 300 denarii. Judas, out of greed, betrayed Christ for just 30 pieces of silver. How clever he was. Judas's objection wasn't, you know, I'd really rather have that money myself than see it wasted like that. No. Judas's objection sounded so pious. This is waste. Why, it could have been used to help the poor. False piety is often the cover for much evil. The Pharisees charged Jesus with blasphemy and attacked him for being a lawbreaker, even while they themselves plotted together to murder. Murder Jesus, murder Lazarus, get rid of the evidence. But it was all under the cover of pious. Enemies of God, those who would undermine the church, the gospel, will often piously argue that their efforts will help bring the unsaved into the church. Soften doctrinal stands or ignore certain doctrines because it will be less offensive to those that are unchurched and more will come. And it sounds spiritual, it sounds positive, but if you think that there are some who will not come to Christ because we sing psalms rather than rock and roll, or teach the sovereignty of God rather than the free will of man, you fall prey to this false kind of piety. And worse than that, you do not understand the gospel. The power of God. Faith comes by hearing, and hearing by the word of God. Well, anyway, Judas's condemnation was contagious. Apparently, the other disciples echo his charges. And now Christ speaks. Verse 7. He comes to Mary's defense. Let her alone. She has kept this for the day of my burial. For the poor you have with you always, but me you do not have always. A remark about his burial almost seems a little out of context in this happy, joyous, festive occasion, doesn't it? This is a celebration of resurrection and of life, and Jesus throws out burial. But Jesus takes Mary's actions, he takes her extravagant gift to point to his death, which is just days away. Jesus' statement about Mary can be understood in a couple of ways. One is that Mary comprehended what none of the other disciples did regarding Jesus' coming death on Calvary. She understood, unlike the others, that the end was near. Another way of understanding what Jesus said is that Mary had bought this spikenard with a view to his eventual death. That is, she was just planning ahead. And because of her joy over Lazarus's resurrection, she got this as a gift someday for Christ in his death. It does seem that Mary had an understanding of what was coming. She is the one that has been listening again and again at the feet of Jesus. She is the one that has been paying attention. Mary has been sitting as a learner, as a true disciple of Jesus Christ, and understood what he was saying in regards to his death. So her extravagant act was not only out of love and thankfulness for Lazarus's life, but also with a view toward Jesus' own life. Own death. The word burial that Jesus uses more literally means preparation for burial. So it refers to the cleaning and wrapping of the body in linens and spices that would be done before the burial. Indeed, they would use spices like spikenard. And so by her extravagant gift, Mary was figuratively preparing Jesus Christ for his burial after his death upon Calvary. A death which is only about 6 days away. No doubt, some of that fragrance, that expensive, oily spikenard, cling to his garments, even as Christ was led to Calvary and the soldiers gambled for his robes. But above all, Mary valued Christ. She truly loved him with all of her heart and all of her soul and all of her mind. And so she gave to Christ generously what she could to honor him in advance of his death. For her. Here's an important lesson for us. Jesus the Christ willingly gave his all for us. He laid down his life that we might have life. If we are truly his sheep, then like Mary, we will treasure Christ above all else. We will with love and thanks give with generosity, not just money, but our time, our service, but most importantly, our hearts, our all. What about you this morning? Are you a selfish follower of Christ, more like Judas, wondering what advantage you can get out of Christ? Or are you committed to Jesus Christ as his disciple like Mary, filled with thankful love and willing to give all that you have, all that you are, even your life itself? Shall we pray?